It's time for the Phenology Report. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are closing out fall. We are standing on the precipice of winter, but not there yet. I've seen a little ice on the bird feeder water, the bird bath water, and I have seen a little ice. I haven't seen any ice on any of the puddles, but then I haven't had a lot of puddles to see ice on. This morning there was a pretty good frost on everything, but so far we're holding winter at bay. I have not seen any snow yet in my part of the world. The kids from Grand Marais reported snow up there and a half inch of rain at some point. So there is a bit of it in the area, but nothing that has fallen and accumulated on the ground. This time of year, a lot of animals like the chipmunks. If you're still seeing chipmunks, yours are either they maybe were loafing all summer and didn't put away enough food, and so they're still out gathering food for their granaries. Chipmunks spend the winter in torpor. That is, they do not hibernate in the same way that their larger cousin, the woodchuck, does. The chipmunk brings a lot of food underground, a lot of seeds, and stores them, sugar maple seeds or sunflower seeds if you have a feeder, and they have these granaries in their tunnel networks, and they store their food down there. But they don't fall into hibernation. They are torporous, and they lower their body temperature considerably, but they are also on the verge of waking up, and part of the reason for that is the presence of the weasel. Now, weasels at this point are, because of the angle of the sun and the number of hours of daylight, they have begun to transition from brown of summer to white of winter, and that's going to make them pretty visible over the next few weeks until we get some snow on the ground. And so keep your eye out for weasels right now. They're going to be pretty white, and all of them have a little black tip on their tail. And you may wonder why the black tip on their tail. Well, it turns out that in experiments with dummied up weasels and hawks, they would present a weasel-sized target for a hawk with no white tip on the, or black tip on the tail, and the hawk would invariably strike the target and capture it. When they replaced the target with a target with the black tip on the tail, it caused the hawk to hesitate momentarily, which gave the weasel a chance to escape. So the black tip on the tail confuses the predator in a way that allows the weasel an extra half a second or second to disappear and escape. So keep an eye out for weasels and what they're up to. And know that your chipmunks are sleeping, but not soundly, because they know that the weasel fits in their den just perfectly. And oftentimes the weasel doesn't have a den. The weasel simply exploits others' homes. Like, he will come down a chipmunk hole and kill the chipmunk if he's lucky. And then he will just spend, a day consuming the chipmunk. And at the end of that time, he'll just run off and go find another chipmunk and spend a day or two in the next chipmunk's hole. So the weasels are pretty effective out there, and I suppose doing their jobs in a way that you might find a bit, I don't know, sanguine. But on the other hand, they are definitely making their own way in a tough world. The chipmunk's big cousin, the woodchuck, is in the process or has already created a den and is hibernating. And the woodchuck, there is one that is has excavated a den underneath my woodpile. And I suspect that he'll be fine there until or unless he's not dug deep enough. And when I burn off the wood that's over his back, he might get exposed. I don't think so. I think he's probably got a hole down into the ground. Typically, they dig a den where in the forest they have a den that they use as their hibernaculum, and they dig a deep hole. They get down quite a ways, below the frost line for sure. And they just depend on the fat that they brought with them into the den. And they're going to be, this time of year, they're going to be plump and ready for a winter of hibernation, where they will drop their body temperature to about 4 degrees above freezing. Their heart rate will fall from, 100 beats a minute to about 4. Respiration drops off to once every minute or so. They really, really shut down. And if you could find a woodchuck in the middle of this hibernation, you could handle it for several hours, for maybe a day before it actually recovered enough to wake up. And so they truly are hibernators, unlike the little chipmunks. Around my yard, still seeing some robins. As always, we kind of, noting the last of something is difficult, especially in some cases like the last flicker or the last robin or the last trumpeter swan. Those kinds of things are a little bit difficult. And the way you do it is you note when you see them. And last Saturday, I saw robins in my yard. And yesterday, I saw robins in my yard. The supply of apples that has brought them in is dwindling. And they and the ruffed grouse are there every day dining on those that remain. But at some point, they're going to exhaust them. And when that happens, I suspect that they will move on. And then perhaps I will see my last robins. But typically, my last robins are sometime in mid to late November, which is about where we are now. The northern holly, the winterberry, is quite empty of berries right now. I was out there yesterday, and from the shrub that I watch, from, say, more than 100 berries, it dropped to about a dozen a week ago, and yesterday when I was there, there were 4 berries remaining, and I saw one berry on the ground, so I suspect that they are probably not being eaten. They are simply dropping to the ground, and interestingly, the winterberry, because of those berries and the fact that birds like them, robins, white-throated sparrows, partridge, ruffed grouse, they eat those berries. And typically the birds will fly along trails. And so the trail that I used to get down to the lake now has these intermittent growing winterberries along the edge, where the birds have eaten the berries, flown a bit, and then passed the berry and the seed, passed the seed. And the seed then proceeds to grow another winterberry or black alder or northern holly. So all three names, same plant. I have a plant called black chokeberry. It's not related to chokecherry, but it is a berry. It has a fruit on it that birds like. And I have been lucky enough to, I have both a varietal that I got from the soil and water conservation folks and planted that one. And I also have wild black chokeberry. And they're quite different in their phenology. The phenology of the varietal is much earlier. The plant is much more vigorous. It has bigger leaves. It has more berries. It really does a better job of reproducing than the native black chokeberry. But the native black chokeberry is just now losing its leaves and still has some dried fruits on it, whereas the varietal that is in my yard is down to, oh, it had maybe a dozen leaves on it last week, and bright red, bright, almost fire engine red leaves, and just these few standing at the tops of the tallest branches. Quite pretty and worth looking at. Something interesting this year, this is the time of year when typically I will note the presence of autumn willow. And I have one that I pass every day that's at the end of my driveway. And this year I paid especially close attention to it because I knew it was there and I was hoping that I would be able to see it, you know, produce its fluffy white seeds. And so I was watching, and this last week on the 8th, I saw the first white seeds. And up to that point, they were closed pods. So they get a column, they get a flower like many of the willows that is quite a bit like the aspen. It's a long catkin, and the capsules are kind of khaki-colored or sort of a light brown color, sand-colored maybe. And then on the 8th of November this year, they burst open, and now there are these bright white, fluffy-looking catkins. Think, something a bit like the seed pod of a milkweed. They pop open. There are all these fluffy white tufts of hairs that support the seed to blow it away and have it travel down the road and become another autumn willow somewhere else. The interesting thing about autumn willows is that if you have one, you likely don't have another one right next to it. Willows, as a species, tend to colonize an area and dominate, and you get like, you know, 500 pussy willows all in the same spot, or 500 Bebs willows, or 500 whatever willows all in the same area, because they're growing either rhizotomously or from seed, but they spread. The autumn willow, you're going to find one here, and then maybe if you're lucky, 100 feet away, there'll be another one, and maybe another 100 feet away, there'll be a third one. So they don't colonize the way the other willows do. But this time of year are pretty easy to see. So if you're driving along a bog somewhere or a swamp this morning, look in there. And if you see these big white fluffy looking candles, they're going to be, couple inches long and maybe a half to three quarters of an inch wide, and bright white if the sun is behind them. And you will be looking at autumn willow. Besides the autumn willow, I noticed as I was walking around yesterday, lots of asters and goldenrods are at full seed stage. They all look puffy and fluffy, and they're not all pure white. Some are kind of a dirty yellowish brown. Some are just brown looking. Some are gray looking, but they are all fluffy, and that's the same as with the willow. They use these fine hairs attached to a seed in order to spread their plants from one place to another. And right now they are at their peak. And if you're out and about, you probably are seeing these puffy white fluffs. And those are the asters and the goldenrods. And they are looking pretty good right now. Mentioned earlier that the trumpeter swans were flying around the area. I've seen them on my lake, and I've seen them flying overhead. They will move south as the ice closes the lakes, but they'll only move far enough south that they can find food and spend the winter. They don't seem to mind the cold weather as long as food is available. As long as there's open water, they'll be fine. I mentioned, too, that the squirrel and the bird in my yard sort of alerted me to the bald eagles. The bald eagles have been coming to the nest every day or so, and they sometimes spend the night there, and sometimes they just drop in and spend a couple hours, and then off they go again. It's quite entertaining to watch their peregrinations. My nephew, Nathan Herfindahl, who lives down in the Brainerd area, sent me a note saying that on his small bit of property in the Brainerd area, he had 17 squirrel drays. And these are the little chambers that the gray squirrels make. They cut branches off of the trees when they're green, and they make these little, oh, I always think of a muff, you know, the type of thing that you see women of half a century ago or football players wear, these little places where they can put their hands to get them warm. And the squirrels have used that same design as well. And they do it in a way that the branches then sort of close, and they can kind of wiggle their head in there, and then it expands and they crawl in, and then it closes again. And Bernd Heinrich, in his book Winter World, talks about is taking one of these squirrel drays apart, and they have, the one that he took apart had 23 layers of leaves building this sort of chamber of insulation around the squirrel when it's inside. So it's pretty warm in there. And the gray squirrel is one of those squirrels that spends its life in the trees. It doesn't like the red squirrel has an underground den, and it will retreat to the den when it gets really cold. But the gray squirrels live in those drays, and they'll build several of them. So one gray squirrel might have several of them that he will visit. But check them out, and they're really quite interesting. Plants with leaves on them, blackberries still have their last few bright red leaves, and a weeping willow still has its leaves. And looking out the window here at KAXE, I see that the buckthorn still has leaves on it. So if you have a green leafed bush in your yard, it may in fact be buckthorn, and it might be worth a look. Tamaracks in my yard are down to their last ratty needles. I mean, they are really at the end. It's very soon and they will be completely bare of their needles. Got a note from Al Lipke over in Hibbing, and he said that he had, pardon me, dark-eyed juncos in his yard. And I also got a note from Steve Young, who lives up north of Bemidji, and he sent me a video of two gray fox that were eating apples in his yard. And in the video, you see one on the ground eating apples, and into the frame from up somewhere in the apple tree comes the second one climbing down the tree. And that is characteristic of gray fox. They are quite adept at climbing trees. And finally, you know, this is the season for the odd bird. Especially owls are going to be moving into the area. Great gray owls, snowy owls, hawk owls. Maybe you'll get lucky and see a boreal owl. My friend Ed Anderson up in Big Fork has a short-eared owl hanging out at his house. And has been there for a week or more. And so they've had a chance to get a good close look at the short-eared owl. If you have critters hanging out in your yard that are a little bit unusual, I'd love to hear from you about it. It would be fun to add those notes to the Phenology Report. That's been the Phenology Report for this week. As always, you know, keep in touch. We need your eyes and ears. And, of course, this being deer season, you should have lots of interesting things to talk about.
You can catch Phenology at our website, kaxe.org, or through the podcast or the Season Watch newsletter.